Welcome back to Here to Speak, the podcast where we explore all the things communication and connection. I'm Megan, a speech-language pathologist, and I'm so excited to be here with Haley, a board-certified music therapist, for part two of this conversation. Last time you talked about how speech therapy and music therapy overlap, but today we're diving even deeper into how music supports development, regulation, and real-life communication. Haley, welcome back.
Hi, thank you for having me back.
Yes, of course. So I thought it would be fun to start with a little myth busting because there are definitely some misconceptions about music therapy. Here's the first one. I can just play music for my child or sing with them at home.
Oh, yes, we hear that a lot, especially whenever we have parents come in and go, my child loves YouTube, so they must benefit from music therapy. And there's obviously a huge difference between music enjoyment and the therapy model. I would think it would probably be similar to a parent coming in to you guys and saying, well, I talk to my child. Why do they need speech therapy? Obviously, as therapists, what's very different is we have all that additional training, right? That lets us see those small signs and cues of what progress needs to be made, if there is any. And we have the training as music therapists to use music as the tool to help them make progress. So while playing music is beneficial and it definitely has its own research and studies to show how it helps development at a young age, there's a huge difference between someone who's a trained therapist implementing it and using it as an assist to help a kiddo or an adult make progress in an area that they may need versus a family member or friend just doing it for an enjoyment purpose.
Very nice. The next one would be music therapy is just singing songs.
Yes, we get that a lot too. And kind of piggybacking on what I just said, music therapists are obviously trained as therapists. And so we're using music to help assist individuals. And what we choose, even if it is a song we didn't write ourselves, if it's something that is already created or a common pop song or famous song, there's a reason that it was chosen. And the best example I can think of this is actually like when we work in memory care. You may come in and you may see that, oh, we're just singing generational music. But the aspect that you don't see is we're looking at each individual and their affect and how their mood is changing. Are they talking more? Are they having more energy? Is their memory improving during those moments? And then we have the capability to change what we're doing. Maybe they need something softer, something louder, something more upbeat. Maybe we start to remove words so they can fill in the blank and start to really test those brain skills. So on the outside looking in, even if it's just seeming like we're singing group music together, there's a lot more that goes into it than just that.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like the myth for speech therapists only play. There's way more that goes into just playing. We're looking at, are we following directions? Are we taking turns? Are we filling in the blanks? A lot of like what you're looking for. There's a purpose to everything that we're doing. And so that was great.
Yeah.
The next one is speech therapy already covers everything.
Yes. So we get this a lot, and I feel like I keep saying that, but these are really great myths because it is things we hear all of the time that speech therapists and music therapists do have a lot of crossover, but obviously our training is very different. One of the key areas I think of is music therapists don't have the specific training that speech therapists do, like in articulation and the anatomy of a mouth. And if there are things going on that are causing speech to like fundamentally be hard to hear or produce, that's not something that as music therapists we're trained with. We partner with speech therapists a lot, and we have the training of how do you can sing and create more air and manipulating the mouth in ways that are similar to what I just said with singing. But even though speech therapists will use play and music a lot, and music therapists will use speech skills and music and play a lot as well, we have very different training, which I know you know, and what we're targeting is very different. A lot of times music therapy supports speech and communication, and it's not working on as much of the fundamentals like a speech therapist is going to. A lot of what we see is more social skill based, learning to communicate with a device or through speech or whatever means they're wanting to use for communication. And it's encouraging that because the music is the motivator that's helping them have higher progress, or maybe they're not as resistant to the therapy model because it's the way their brain works.
Yeah. I love that you said that it's different than what we do, but it's really neat to see how our paths intertwine as we're working with these individuals, because we both have our positives that help progress them so much further than if we were to do it by ourselves. So
absolutely. Yeah.
The next one is music is for only kids. And I know you mentioned earlier, like when you're doing group therapy. So is music only for kids?
It's not. Music therapy is practiced with literally the itty bittiest babies in the NICU to end of life hospice care. And each stage is very different on how we approach it and what the goals may look like. When you have the itty bitties in the NICU that may be going through a lot of very hard and painful things, a lot of the times that has to help with making them more comfortable, pain reduction, bonding with parents if there's not a lot of skin to skin at that time. And then, as we know, a lot of with the middle of beginning to end is kiddos that we work with that we hear a lot of, like on the autism spectrum with communication, socialization, and behavior. But then as you start to get out of that age group and you get more into the adult and older, individual side of things, that music is used usually for, depending on what we're working on, if it's adults with disabilities, maybe that they don't have independent living skills. It could be a quality of life thing, a socialization thing. They're maybe just seeking community. Yeah. And then, like I shared earlier, depending on if they're in a memory care facility at like an end of life or a hospice facility, a lot of times it's helping make them more comfortable, helping them exercise those parts of their brains that may not be stimulated all the time. As we know, some of these facilities that they go to cannot always have the most stimulation going on. So music is a way to help them bond with people around them, because even though we find that they come from very different walks of life, culturally, music is very similar for most of them. And it's something that they can all identify with and bond over.
Oh, that's a really neat way to put it. Music is everywhere and it doesn't matter. You enjoy it.
Yes.
The last one for the myths is you have to be musical to benefit.
Yes. And actually that is in the music therapy definition, that you do not have to be musical to benefit. You do not have to be able to match pitch, sing, play an instrument, have rhythm, anything like that. It goes into, one, obviously enjoyment. That's the most important. If they come in and they hate music, that is not for them. But then also it, as I had mentioned, it's an additional assist to help them make progress on whatever stage of life they're in. And so if the music is a motivator for them and they are able to gain progress, that's what we're looking at. It's not that they are able to match pitch. I have had, once again, I'm going to like a memory care hospice facility that I have individuals, they can't sing and carry a tune at all, but they feel it with their heart. And that memory starts coming back of lyrics whenever, you know, just 5 minutes ago, I asked them their name and they couldn't even tell me, but they can remember all the words to a song from their childhood. And so, I'm not viewing it as, oh my gosh, you know, Betty, that's the first name that came to my mind. Betty, you know, is really off pitch over there when she's singing Danny Boy or whatever it is. And so, yeah, it's not about that. It's about the bond and the community and the memory and quality of life and all of those things.
It's really neat to sit across and watch you talk about this, because like even just looking in your eyes, you can tell how passionate you are about this. So I only hear a lot about the kids stuff. So hearing about the adult music and the therapy that you provide, it's really, really eye-opening. So that's awesome to hear.
And I love getting to touch on it and share about it, just because I can say too, even though we live in such a very, very large city, a lot of people think that whenever kids graduate high school, there's no need for services anymore. And I find that there is a huge deficit in our area for after 18 for services for individuals with disabilities. And so I feel very passionate about their needs are just as great as the itty bitties. And, you know, they were an autistic child and now they're an autistic adult. It doesn't mean they need less support.
Correct. And I fully support that, because from the speech side of things, I totally agree. It's like we get to this age and everything's supposed to be magically like it's, we're jumping into the next era of life, which is harder for most of our patients. And so thinking about what are they going to do for ADLs? What are they going to do for a job? So continuing to support them through those challenges and to hear all of the great things that you can provide is, I love that.
Yeah. And as you know, when they get to that age too, a lot of times they have that huge transition of now their structure has completely gone away. They had the predictability of what their day was going to look like. I know I go to school and then I go home and now that's gone. And parents, I find that are caregivers for their adult children with disabilities try very hard to fill their days with something so that they are having that structure and predictability still because they thrive off of it. And in my time of being in the area, I have found that it's hard to find things to fill, especially affordably. So I feel very passionate that, yes, what we do with kids is so important and it's definitely our biggest population we work with, but that there is definitely a huge need for post-graduation.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And I know we've spoken on like the after school, but looking at the early intervention, let's talk about starting early and why it's something we should emphasize a lot in speech therapy as well.
Yeah. Research shows us over and over again, the earlier that we can start intervention, the better it is for kids long term to make progress and have that sustained. It honestly goes to kids that have disabilities and that don't. You know, we all the time hear if someone's going to learn a second language, the best time is when they're little because they're sponges at that point. It's the same for other skills and progress as well. And research shows that no matter the therapy, the more you can front load it when they're younger, it gives them a lot more length of time to practice that skill. And their brains are so elastic
and malleable. Yeah.
Yes, I like that. And so they are ready to receive all of that information. And I will say, having a little of my own, her pediatrician shared with me whenever, I think she was about three, maybe it was her 3-year annual visit, that's like, you have to realize too that they're experiencing things for the very first time. Like, you pulled out the Christmas tree this year and she goes, why is there a tree in my house? And why does it have lights on it? Yeah. And it's like, as an adult, we don't think to put ourselves in those shoes. And I feel like when we're working with these kids that it's the same thing. This is the first time they're getting to experience any of this. And then that makes the milestones, as I know you know as a therapist, that more exciting of like, we've been working for this thing and for the first time they did X, Y, and Z. And it's just such a fun age to work with, for sure.
I know, the milestones and seeing them just grow from all of the support and everything that you've given them, it makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
How can music support early language milestones? I love this. All of our answers are going into the next question.
Yeah, they are. So they can support early language milestones because as we've shared with the crossover of speech and music, that we both have practices that we share from the other profession, that music in itself, I was actually just talking about this morning, is with someone who was talking about their child being a gestalt language processor. And I was saying, well, music therapy, we see how beneficial it is communication-wise for a lot of kids who are on the autism spectrum because it has a lot of repetition. And going into early childhood, you can look at any program in the country, any therapy program, it all is based on repeat, 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 because that's what gets the skill. And I don't remember the exact number, but research shows it's however many times, I don't know why seven's in my head, but like however many times before the skill can start to really stick in the brain for a child. And so, that being said, music is naturally set up with, you know, choruses and things, and they repeat. And I tell people all the time, think of, how did you learn your alphabet? Singing the ABC song. And it's got the same, you know, melodic pattern throughout it that repeats. So it's predictable. It's easy for these kiddos that are doing things for the very first time. It allows them to be present in the moment of learning the information without having to overthink of the other aspects, because in a way they're easier than more complicated music. And so music is just naturally built too, to have a pause and to allow space for individuals to chime in and to, you know, add into as well. And so I love that, because going back to the conversation I had this morning of the repetition, I go, as you know, we scaffold away supports and prompting, we can do things with familiar songs, like changing the verses to things that are unpredictable or are non-traditional. Like Old MacDonald had a frog on the farm. Like, that's not one you hear every day. And then also, as you do that, you can then go even to the next step of Old MacDonald had, and you leave it open and it shows them, I can pick anything that I want. And it allows for that natural language to come in that you've just front loaded and started to remove supports away so they can then apply it functionally.
I've never thought of the music and tone as like a natural pausing, but my mind went to pragmatics on like, that is the key nature of what we're teaching when we're teaching kids to take turns and pause and wait. And so while you were saying that, I was thinking of different songs in my head. Wow, there are the natural pauses and there are teaching those moments. So again, the crossover between the pragmatics, the social development, everything is within the music realm. So
yeah,
this is so cool.
Yeah.
And then on the next one, parent coaching through play and music. I know for speech, one of the things I like to recommend is just playing. That's just the natural way that we learn. And from my perspective too, music is almost like a form of play too. You're changing your voice, you're changing your sound, you're being imaginative. So what is that from your standpoint?
Yeah. So I actually took a continuing education course a while ago, very early in my career. And it was talking about how important music is the first 5 or 6 years of life. And it shared, the whole premise of the course too was that the children work with parents on this. Of course, the first thing parents say is, I can't sing, or I'm not musical.
I can't either.
Yeah. As we debunked earlier, right? And so funny enough, research shows kids don't care. They want to hear their parents' voice. And they aren't, one, they're not judging, and they don't know what on pitch and off pitch usually is anyway. But the we talk about all the time of, you know, whenever moms sing to their babies in utero, or just even if they're talking and they come out and the baby recognizes who mom is because they've heard that for 9 months. And it's the same thing of whenever they're on the outside world, that they know who mom and dad are and they know their voice and they have that connection. That's what they care about.
The comfort.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I encourage parents all of the time, anything you see us using, one, of course, we're happy to send you a recording or resources if you're really uncomfortable or if you want it to be exactly how it was. I'll be honest, I've had parents come in before and say, my child told me to stop singing because it wasn't what Miss Haley did, or, you know, whoever did. And I go, oh, no, they did. And they go, no, really, they told me to stop. And so, yes, in those cases, I get it. But when, especially when they're young, they just care about that connection and bond and hearing mom and dad sing to them. And so being present and building all of those skills, like we once again said at the beginning of, if I'm in a hospice facility, I'm not paying attention to that. I'm paying attention to all the other things. That's what the kiddos are doing with their own parents. And research shows it is so, so important to sing with your kids, make music with your kids, be goofy and silly with your kids. And so, you know, make it fun, make it a game. We know with play-based therapy how important it is for them to see resilience and failing in a safe container. It's the same way. Show them that, you know I can't sing this, but that's not what it's about right now.
Yeah, my favorite thing is when I almost tell my parents, just let loose a little bit, just go and have fun. Like, be silly, do something kind of that you wouldn't expect yourself to do. And your kids are going to remember those moments, and it's going to set those like core memories, almost like, dad sat with me and did this and we laughed for hours, or mom did this voice while we read this book. And it's like, those are things that stick with them. And as you mentioned, it's like, we get to see their world for the first time and we get to be the implementers to help them build.
Yeah. So,
one thing I think people don't always realize is how powerful music can be for emotional regulation. So how does that, help with regulation during sessions?
Yeah. So we have a couple of ways, music can help with regulation. So music therapists, as mentioned, work a ton with individuals on the autism spectrum. And we know that sometimes a symptom of that can be regulating, can sometimes be difficult, especially depending on sensory needs, age, things like that. And so whenever we're talking about regulating in that sense that is related to an autism diagnosis, we can go in and teach coping skills, and we can work on teaching them expectations with transition and giving them time to know what's coming ahead, and songs like that, that we create for them. So they know when I hear this song, it means I have 1 minute till I need to move on to the next thing. And then if they end up still having difficulty with the transition, okay, I know I have these songs that teach me the coping strategies I can to get back to a calm place. So it is designed for each kid we work with on what that may be, because obviously everyone decompresses differently. But then there's also the mental health side of things, which we don't always hear as much about in publications, where music therapy will work in different mental health facilities and psychiatric facilities. And that looks a lot like when you see art therapy, which we're not doing art, but it's an expressive outlet for them. And so you'll see a lot of lyric analysis, songwriting, working together in groups. Like I actually for a while worked in a eating disorder recovery center. And a lot of what we did was building that community again of you're not on your own when you're going through this. Now, if you're doing a one-on-one session, which we have some that we do, like maybe with teenagers or young adults that are struggling with mental health, we can use things for them like instrument playing. I actually did that for a long time where I taught teenagers how to cope by learning an instrument. So when they left a treatment facility, they had something they were taking with them. And my idea behind it was maybe we can reduce the chance of relapse and coming back to the facility if they have something tangible and functional and easy, in a sense, to access. Because, right, it can be harder to teach some of those coping skills depending on the situation and, like we've said, repetition, how many times they've done it, versus a lot of teenagers think it's cool to learn an instrument and want to learn an instrument. And so when doing that, it's something that's exciting and it allows them an outlet, whether they know it or not, to express themselves. And even if it's not creating their own music, playing songs that's an artist that they like, that they relate to those lyrics about.
And they can even see their progress from like where you started with them to where they are now.
Yes.
It's like tangible. Yeah.
It's such a confidence booster for sure. I loved doing that model. It was really great getting to see through the treatment facility, because we would start an inpatient all the way to outpatient. So typically they were there for several months at the very least to get through the whole process. And that was more than enough time for them to actually learn the basics and foundational things of playing. We did ukulele. And like I was saying, it's easy in a sense because carrying around a ukulele, it's small and light and easy to take with you. So yeah, we have a wide range of coping skills and regulation skills as music therapists. It just depends on the age and population. But as I mentioned in the first podcast, we meet people where they are. And so it's our job to essentially be the vessel to take them where they need to be. It's already all within them. It's just using the music to take them from point A to point, I'm not even going to say B, but whatever point it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. The next one, do you use music to help clients transition between activities? I can say from a speech standpoint, yes. Just the little songs that I can think of, the cleanup song, I like to hum, or I like to say some of the phrases that the kids like to use just over and over, just with different voices. It really keeps their attention. And it's like they want more, like, ooh, where are we going next? And it's that anticipation. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've cleaned up. Now it's time to leave.
So. Yes. An untraditional one that people wouldn't think of is actually going back to adults and working in a memory care facility. If I'm picking up instruments or passing out instruments, instead of having the dead space and time, I'll usually do a hum, name that tune, and I'll hum it or sing it without the words. So it's testing their memory of like, I know that song. What song is that? And they're thinking about it. And so we're working on skills while a transition is happening. And like I said, it definitely beats just the dead space that can happen. But yeah, with littles, definitely the things you mentioned, we have songs that we create that can be just preparing a kid from, we're moving from one thing to another, because that can be really hard for some of our friends we work with. Or it could be an actionable song, like you said, of we're cleaning up now, or it's time to say hello, or time to say goodbye. I'll add that in now that I'm thinking about it, that I always bookend sessions with that, a hello and goodbye, whether it's for the purpose of socialization and community. It also helps them know this is starting, this is ending, and it's an easy expectation for them to have.
And that structure and routine.
Yes, yes.
Have you seen music reduce anxiety or frustration within anyone that you work with?
Absolutely. Going back to the mental health facility that I was working at, I definitely saw how artistic those individuals were there, and how badly they wanted some expressive outlet of some sort. And a lot of times we see individuals whenever they're having anxiety or maybe struggles with their mental health, it typically is tied to something with control and wanting that control, which I can say even outside of mental health, working with kids, especially on the spectrum, I know we talk about PDA and autonomy all of the time, and that wanting that control so bad that we can see the communication sometimes looks as behaviors, quote unquote, or resistance. And so going back to that, so many of the individuals we work with are just desperate for an outlet that is theirs. We tell families when they first come in and do their consultation with us that this is their 30 minutes to do whatever they want to do. There's no right. There's no wrong. They have the outlet and free will to use this time and space as they need, because most of us, even as adults, don't have very many opportunities like that, that there's no expectations and we can just show up authentically as ourselves. So whether we are working with someone that is in a mental health facility, or we're just working with a friend or a kiddo who is learning how to communicate for the first time, whatever means that is, it removes that wall and barrier that most of the world has put up on them.
A very, very safe place.
Very, yes. Very safe.
Next, we're going to go into a different topic. Why is music therapy often effective for individuals on the autism spectrum disorder?
Yeah, we touched on this some on the last segment. So I spoke about how music uses both hemispheres of the brain at the same time. And so when we're looking at communication, we know that it's only using one side of our brain. And whenever you add in music, there are more neural pathways working, building, and essentially working together to put behind the language aspect. And I'm curious if you feel the same way, but what... One of the main goals I see for most of my kids on the spectrum is communication. And it may be behavioral and socialization, but it feels like communication's kind of always number one.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, whether that's actual, like, functionally communicating, or like you said, in a pragmatic setting where they're just learning to pause and to wait their turn, or ask how to ask questions back. And so that being said, outside of the place of we're helping neurologically language develop, there's also the side of we can create songs that scaffold skills around that as well, of how do you have a conversation? If someone says something, you need to wait your turn and then you can respond back. Or if someone asks you a question, it's typically respectful to, in some form, at least acknowledge that it happened. You know, and we're very big about autonomy at the practice. And so we don't believe you have to do any, like, the eye contact and all of that. But we still like to have people be respectful. So at least acknowledge that you heard they said something. And we can create songs that either have visuals with them, or that don't have visuals. And it's a songwriting exercise that shows the different steps towards some of that language development, which we see more typically with individuals on the autism spectrum.
And I know earlier you mentioned Gestalt Language Processor. My mind goes to the intonation that they love when they are imitating language, and that is seen most often in music. And so a lot of the kids that I work with that are Gestalt Language Processors, I love hearing the change in the intonation that they've learned through music and putting that into their daily activities and making it functional.
Yes.
So that's what would be I see from the music side, like on a daily basis with those learners. It's eye-opening to see, oh, they've paired cleaning up with like, let's go find a fire truck, because I know after they clean up, they get to go get something fun. So it's really neat to see the structure and the routine that they find within that.
Yeah. And I'll say on the flip side, something we do as music therapist is there may be individuals that come with us that have certain vocal stems, and I'm not going to lie, some of them are fun sometimes.
Yes.
And I'm like, I like that. I think I'm going to adopt that one. I had someone the other day that said bees on butter, and I was like, I like the buh, like the buh. Oh, it made me happy.
Uh-huh.
And so on the flip side, they may not even have a song, but we know it's something that they like saying over and over again, because maybe it's providing them comfort or it's just something they enjoy saying. And we can then pair music and meet them where they are, of maybe improvisation or pairing it with a preferred song. And so we see both sides of sometimes they already put it to music, and other times they have a really cool like phrase they use and we want to put it to
music. They're the creator. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
How does music support connection when verbal communication is difficult?
Yeah. So we actually have a social skills group, and it's for an age range, not an ability or disability specific type. And we do that on purpose because we think it's super beneficial for people with all sorts of needs to be able to come in. And we know, too, that they come to us as therapists for support. And a lot of times we model things that we're trying to support. I feel very similarly that they can only get skills with their like-minded peers if they're in a variety of settings or things.
Yeah, like more opportunities, but within a safe concept. Yeah.
Yes. They're in that container that it's somewhat controlled, less controlled than a one-on-one, but there are going to be kids their age that they can't control. And they're also having a wide range of skills demonstrated to them. So that being said, there are ways to connect through music that aren't verbal or even communication skills. It can be something as simple as being all together, playing on a big drum all together, passing something. There's just so many things that I've seen. And I have so many groups of all ages where I have friends in there that have so many different styles of communication. Like I literally have a group where I have someone with a device, someone who signs, and someone who's verbal, and someone who's non-speaking. And so all of that together, it's like, it's my job. Going back to the very beginning, right? As the therapist, that if you had someone just coming in and singing a kid's song without that training, they wouldn't know how to accommodate all of that. And we have four different communication styles at this point. And so I am trying to use the music as the outlet of how can we all bond and be in the same mindset through this song of working on whatever goals we are, but our each individual's needs are being seen.
What are some strengths that you see in your neurodivergent clients through music? I feel like you touched on this just by identifying like the differences within your groups. My mind went to problem solving. Even though we're not using verbalizations, there's lots of problem solving going on. Okay, it's my turn. Oh, no, wait, it's your turn. Oh, wait, no, it's my turn. I must wait. Like so much going on that you don't see, but it's within the body that they're doing.
Yes. There is the actual musicality side and strengths that I can't even tell you how many individuals I've worked with on the autism spectrum that have immaculate pitch and rhythm. And we know that their brains obviously work differently, and patterns are something that they're very strong in. We know this because a lot of them too, like rainbows, like lining up things, the alphabets, and those patterns stimulate their brain. Well, music is essentially patterns, and the way the piano is, the way the notes go, the way that songs sound, they're patterns. And I have had individuals that have never played piano before in their life, but they hear something and immediately can play it just from one time because their brain recognizes the patterns. Also, too, they, as you said, they problem solve, and they are very forgiving and kind. I feel like they're very patient. And I love that aspect of like my social skills groups of everyone could have such different needs for why they're in that group, but they're all there to enjoy the 45 minutes they are and how kind they are. And I've once again feel like it's a rare thing in life for us to have moments that we have a group of people from such different areas of life or different needs that can come together and just have 45 minutes that is all like-minded and together. So, I tell people all of the time, going back to me being the vessel, I also get way more from working with the individuals I work with than I could ever give them. They teach me patience and kindness yes. and how to view the world in a different lens that I don't always see. And I think as adults, we forget to slow down, and they remind me like there's so much beauty in the simplicity of yeah. moments. So yeah.
Yeah, you're making me tear up, and I didn't even mean to. It's so true, though. Like, the people that the kids and just any ages, they're like the reason we do everything. And seeing, yes, we are changing their lives, but they're changing us so much more than they could ever imagine. So,
yes.
Well, you've shared such amazing things today. Why don't we dig into making it a little bit practical for families listening? So, what are some simple ways families can incorporate music into their everyday routines?
Yes. So something I do with my daughter outside of the transition songs that I've already mentioned and teaching her coping skills, because like I said, she's a toddler and we're working on it. We're trying hard. But technology can really be used to our advantage these days. We have access to any streaming service, really. So outside of the traditional YouTube, something that I do with my daughter is I have Alexa set up that I give it a command, and it's bath time is what I say. Oh. And whenever that happens, it turns on a preferred playlist for her that I know she likes, and it says setting 20-minute timer. And so she knows when that playlist ends and that timer goes off, it's time for me to get out and transition to the next thing.
Aww.
So there's so many accessible ways to access music now. As I know, we hear all of the time that we have too much technology at our fingertips. There is the beneficial side that we have access to pretty much anything that we want when it comes to that. So I try to encourage parents to use it as much as they can in their benefit to help with routines and structure and predictability, especially if they have little ones that no matter the developmental level is just going to be something they need to work on anyway.
Do parents need to be musical to do this effectively? No. I would say no, just based on what we've said. My mind goes back to just be silly, just be fun.
Yes.
And I'm not musical at all. So I have to remind myself, it's okay. They really like it.
Yes, yes.
And what's one easy activity families can start today?
So my brain naturally didn't go to music specific. It went to just slowing down and being present specific, because we know, going back to technology, how easy it is for us to get engulfed in it. And we hear how important it is for a child's development to have a present parent there. So whether you're using music for that time, I think just being there for the bond and the memories, like you said, when they get older, they think back of, oh, my parents used to just be goofy and silly. And so I just encourage parents to slow down and to maybe build it into their routine. If it's their nighttime routine, their morning routine, brushing their teeth, whatever it is, they can just add a silly song, because there's plenty that already exist if they don't want to come up with their own. But during that time, whether it's a minute long or several minutes long, just being fully present with the child.
That was amazing.
Thank you.
All right, let's end with a quick fun round.
Ooh.
A song you sing all the time in therapy.
I'm trying to think of something outside of like the boring answers of like hello, goodbye, transition songs.
I like the rain one.
The rain one.
What's the really cool rain stick or
the ocean drum?
Yes.
Yes, we do the ocean drum song a lot. So the ocean drum is this cool thing. And I realize the people listening versus the people seeing me, it's gonna be a different experience, but it's this big round drum that is flat and has beads that go back and forth. And it sounds similar to a rain stick, but the reason we love this so much is it vibrates and it gives a good sensory experience for our sensory.
Yes.
So as the beads roll over the bottom shakes like and vibrate like a drum would.
That's so cool.
So sensory seekers, well, it's one way or another. They either absolutely hate it or they like won't give it back to us. Yeah. And so the ocean drum song is a super common one that we use a lot. I don't know if there's anything that I have on regular rotation because I try as hard as I can to keep it fresh for kids and adults. So probably outside of the hello, goodbye and transition, that would be one of the more common ones we use.
Okay. A moment that reminded you why you love what you do.
I can remember that I had a kid after I started my practice and he was, I'm trying to think how to word it.
There's probably honestly so many things.
Yes. He needed a lot of support. And he was in a setting that wasn't meeting his needs. He was a teenager and he had a device that he needed to use to communicate. And he would stem on it. And it was not used for any functional communication whatsoever. His parents swore up and down that music was his thing. But his aggressiveness was so severe, it was very hard for them to find anyone who would be willing to work with him and be patient enough to see the long-term progress. Because we see both sides, right? Where we have kids that start and it's like everything clicks really fast for them. And then we have other kids that we work with that it's maybe a centimeter or less at a time. And it's like they are making progress, but it's sometimes a little slower. And so he was one of those that it wasn't that the progress was slow, but that finding the right outlet for someone who'd be patient enough to get in there and get over the initial hurdle of the aggressiveness and some of the other behaviors that he had as well was hard. And so I remember that I worked with him for over a year, and where he started, he actually didn't even make it into my room. He sat outside on the sidewalk and I talked to him for a few seconds before he tried to hit me. And we just kept at it. And every week they came in and we got a little closer and we got a little closer. I brought out instruments to him so he knew who I was and what was going on. And after seeing him for a year or year and a half, he actually got to the point that he could use his iPad effectively to communicate. And it wasn't that there wasn't the ability in there. He was completely non-speaking. And there wasn't the ability of how to use it. He actually had immaculate functional language and could speak in full sentences, type anything you could imagine. But getting over that hurdle to give him, like we say, the music is the assist and I'm taking what's already in him, that he saw his capability and that the sky was the limit. And I remember sitting there, I was like, this is why I did it was one of the longest journeys I had had. His parents unfortunately moved, and so we had to stop services, or else I'm sure I'd still be seeing him now. But just going that year and a half of remembering, we literally started sitting on the sidewalk and you tried to hit me, and now you're in my room making 6 to 7 word sentences requesting what you want. And even like he would know when he was about to be unregulated that he could say, I'm about to be angry or things like that, and being able to have those coping skills to let us know what was coming. So that was an amazing moment for me.
That's a beautiful representation of connection over compliance, which is one of the favorite things I like to say. So that's, I love that.
Yeah.
What's one word to describe music therapy?
Oh. That's hard. One word. Oh, I'm like, can I hyphenate it? Does that count?
Just hyphenate it a few times. No one.
There
will
you
know.
Go. Just hyphenate it. Music therapy is. These are all hyphens, by the way. No. I mean, my first thing that I think of, at least for me personally, is person centered, and it's all about the individual.
Yeah.
There we go. At least in how I view it, as like you just said, with not being compliance based. If you view the person as a whole human.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're the vessel for their expressive outlet that they need and you're not putting any expectations on it, it really is the sky is the limit of what you can create together.
Mm-hmm.
Something too, as music therapists, is that a lot of us started with performing in some capacity, whether that is like truly being a performer or we learned an instrument or we're a vocalist and we're in choirs and things like that. Because obviously to practice your craft, you have to have the repetition. And a lot of times you're in ensembles and things like that. And so as music therapists, something that a teacher or professor in college told me that I, not that I need to work on, he told the class that we needed to be mindful and cognizant of, is that when you're in the room with a client, it can't be about you. And it, I know that for all therapists, it kind of feels like that's a no-brainer. But as a musician, it's another level, because you feel sometimes like you have to be on, you have to perform, you have to get all the notes right, you have to sing the right things. And the best sessions I've had have been when I messed up everything musically and I was just present with them. And it's when you let your quote unquote ego stay at the door that you can truly be present. That's where all of the progress comes, because you, then you're there for the right reason, which is the client. Yeah.
How can our viewers find you?
Yeah, we're on all social media platforms, and we also have our own website, which is helpfulharmoniesmt.com.
This has been such a great conversation. I think what really stands out is how powerful music can be, not just for communication, but for connection, regulation, and engagement. And when we bring speech therapy and music therapy together, we're really giving our clients even more ways to succeed. Haley, will you please share anything new or exciting you have going on?
Yeah. So right now we just developed a new program of us helping early childhood centers and daycare centers, having music therapists go in and support their classrooms there. Because as we've discussed multiple times today, early childhood intervention is crucial. And we find that a lot of these programs want and need things to fill their day and stimulate the kiddos there. And parents are wanting it as well. And as a business, I saw a need in the area, so I decided to try to fill that to see if anyone was interested. And so far, it's been going extremely well, that a lot of daycares love that what we bring to the table is more than a music entertainer. With all of our knowledge in the developmental milestones and with multiple abilities in one classroom of accommodating, that we're able to do so much more and meet so much more of the child's needs there, that by the time they leave, they're actually obtaining skills and are happy to see the progress through music that we can make versus maybe if someone's just going in there to sing to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening to Hear to Speak, where every voice matters. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to share it with a parent, educator, or therapist who could benefit from this conversation.